The Human Rights Institute at UConn, which was founded in 2003, is a internationally respected program and is a core for the research and the studies that go on in the field of human rights. There are 200 students either majoring or minoring in human rights, making it one of the largest programs of its kind in the United States. Shireen Hertel is an associate professor of political science who also has a joint appointment in the Human Rights Institute, and she focuses her work on labor and economic rights issues, and she is also the editor of the Journal of Human Rights. Several years ago, she collaborated with UConn engineering professor Allison McKay to create an interdisciplinary course on assessment for human rights and sustainability. Professor McKay is now at Ohio State University, where she is professor of civil, environmental, and geodetic engineering. But with the magic of technology, a live simulcast allows them to teach students in stores and in Columbus, Ohio, for this class, which is now beginning its fourth year. Professor Hertel described how this course was developed, why it's integral to the new field of engineering for human rights, which is being pioneered right here in stores.
Allison and I were good friends and always looking for ways to collaborate. And because I research largely in the area of supply chain management, where do your shoes come from? Where does your cocoa in the morning come from? And Allison works on fate of contaminants, how polluted is the world and how long will that pollution hang around? We realized that we had an extraordinary area of mutual interest, which was really looking at how we would assess social and environmental sustainability of all the products that we use and corporations' own records of social and environmental compliance. And so we developed a course that we would teach jointly across the human rights and engineering listings with students from both areas. And the goal was really to equip those students to assess the readiness of companies to comply with both legal requirements and then voluntary standards that go above and beyond what the law requires.
Moving multinational businesses toward corporate social responsibility policies began in 1971 with the efforts of clergyman and civil rights leader, the Reverend Leon Sullivan, who was the first African-American to serve on the board of a major corporation when he joined the board of directors of General Motors. He developed the Sullivan Principles for American companies operating in South Africa under apartheid. Reverend Sullivan later worked with the United Nations to create a code of ethical conduct for multinational corporations aimed at treating all workers equally around the world. More recently, John Ruggie of the Harvard Kennedy School developed the United Nations Guiding Principles for Business and Human Rights adopted by the UN Human Rights Council. Professor Hertel says the work started by Sullivan and Ruggie is an essential part of what UConn students learn about business, human rights, and responsible business practice.
So what I learned in teaching with Allison, which was fantastic, and working with somebody who's looking at the engineered substances in the product, we also think about what happens when you're done with that cell phone. Where does the cell phone get deposited? What happens when the recycling process of the cell phone isn't carried out ethically in the developing countries where our e-waste gets dumped? So you're really looking at from the very beginning conceptual process all the way through use and end use. And our class really equips students very much in the spirit of Sullivan or Ruggie to look at going above and beyond the minimum threshold for doing well by doing good. And what's exciting for me about teaching jointly with engineering is that we're looking at how to bring a whole new set of actors into this conversation around social responsibility, corporate social responsibility, business and human rights. Typically, a lot of the conversation in that area has been in the domain of law. So colleagues in the School of Law or the School of Business would have been the natural go-to colleagues. But engineers are intimately involved in the design and fabrication and manufacturing and production and end use. And so part of what is exciting for me about doing this work now with colleagues in engineering is you're bringing a whole new set of actors into this conversation around responsible business practices.
From my reading of what you've done in research and publication about this idea of sustainability in business practice is that the social science and humanities students who are in this class and the engineering students come at it obviously from different perspectives, but they need to know the other side of the equation in order to do their job and to understand the bigger picture.
And that has been one of the most gratifying elements of this teaching. Typically in a class, once jointly on campus and then twice remotely, What's been extraordinary is watching the dynamism of these groups of students who've never worked across either divides within the social sciences and humanities and engineering, or even across subfields within engineering. So we will typically have in any given class students from five or six different fields in engineering, mechanical, civil, environmental, etc. And then you'll have students from within the humanities, literature, Chinese, English, and then you'll have students from within the social sciences, anthropology, economics, political science, and occasionally we'll have students from within the natural sciences, physical neurobiology, the College of Ag and Natural Resources. And we intentionally set up groups to do company audits, assessments of company practices.
And you're deriving this from the real world.
Exactly. Because what we say is, if you were a mixed skills audit team and Reebok asked you to come look at the fabrication of soccer balls in Pakistan and you found child labor in that supply chain, the engineer's not going to know what to do with the child. The social scientist will. But let's say you found contaminants in the waste stream. The social scientist is going to have a challenge to measure the actual level of contamination. The engineer won't. We would love to see you go out in the world equipped to speak across boundaries about common goals. The common goal of that production process should be social and environmental responsibility. But how we arrive at that goal is inherently going to involve people with mixed skills in a conversation. And so learning to work across those borders as an undergrad is extraordinarily advantageous.
Now, the place that you get a lot of information for the class, as I understand it, is the Business and Human Rights Resource Center, because that is a registry of companies that are trying to work in this area. Explain how that works and what you draw from it.
I'm publishing a book that will be coming out in the spring of 2019 with Oxford University Press called Tethered Fates: Companies, Communities, and Rights at Stake. And I draw a lot on the Business and Human Rights Resource Center database. It's 7,000 companies' reports about them and by them. Civil society groups report out. And it's an extraordinary data set that's publicly available. You don't have to pay to use it. On corporate practices, you can look up an issue, you can look up a company, you can look up a region, you can cross-reference and get all the journalistic or corporate information available on and about that company. And so I mine that in my own research to look at where companies are engaging with people in local communities to remedy and address some of these kinds of problems. My students use the BHHRC data directly in their classes because they need to be double assessing, essentially, what the company says from a social and environmental standpoint that it's doing.
Professor Hertel says that while doing research for her new book, she found that one of the most important ways businesses can improve a community while being socially responsible is to listen to the people who live in the community.
What was really extraordinary to me, I did research for the book in communities in the Dominican Republic where we manufacture Yukon product. There is a tremendous amount of creativity and energy in even the most humble person who lives in and is affected by the community. Some of the best ideas for ways that that community could benefit from the business being there, even indirectly, were generated by folks who lived in the shadow of the factory but didn't work there. Folks gave me great ideas like, wouldn't it be fantastic if the company could collaborate with local government on creating a footbridge across the five-lane highway so that workers, as they go to work, and all the rest of us could benefit from using it and be safer? Wouldn't it be terrific if we load shared on solar that was produced in the wake of very bad infrastructure in many developing countries where the power is going out continually, if there were solar panels that could be jointly shared for generating electricity, not only to keep the factory powered up so that we're not using diesel power and polluting the environment, but so that we could also power a community center, for example. And so this idea of social and environmental sustainability was really well articulated by folks with modest education and often very humble means in extremely profound and sophisticated ways. I think you're invoking Leon Sullivan. Sullivan had an incredible notion of connection to the community in all of the places he talked early on in the life of this discussion around business and human rights in South Africa and elsewhere. Learning to listen is a big part of making an impact in this area.